It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. 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 It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. This is the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, the Tarncast.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Charlie Wyrock. I am the host of the Tarncast, and we have a very special guest today. He was fifth on our list, so thanks to the other four for bowing out. It's Todd Robert Anderson.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, that happens to me a lot.
No, it happens to me all the time.
I think most of my career is just because people bowed out, or the good people weren't willing to do it.
I'm exclusively on that list. Just if somebody falls out or wants too much money, I'm the next guy. Not the guy, the next guy. So, yeah, that happens.
You also said, I noticed that at the beginning of your show, this is an afternoon podcast? Or can people listen to it at other times of the day?
I prefer in the afternoon.
Just in the afternoon.
Like, as a soothing, like a cleansing of the palate before dinner.
Yeah.
I think.
Just a nice hour.
Just, yeah.
Meditative hour.
Just put it on while you're vacuuming,
uh-huh.
I think. Or,
'cause that way you won't really be able to hear it as much.
Yeah. I like to turn down Anderson Cooper and just hear myself talk. just for an hour.
That's cool. He's handsome, that Anderson Cooper.
And super rich.
Really rich.
Like, yeah. His mom is crazy rich.
Oh, he like can't... What?
Gloria Vanderbilt is his mother.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He's a Vanderbilt.
Oh. Like, why is his last name Cooper, then?
That's his father's last name.
Oh. So his father married into the Vanderbilt fortune?
I'm not sure of the backstory. We're not tight.
Well, you launched with this information, and all I have is questions.
Yep,
this is all news. I didn't know he was a rich guy.
I know this. There is a documentary on HBO this month about her. I'm sure it will answer most, if not all, of your questions.
Oh, I saw that in the listing.
Nothing Left Unsaid, or something.
And
like that.
Isn't Anderson Cooper, like, in it or something?
Yeah, it's about him and his mom.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to do legwork for you on this.
Okay. Well, I was wondering why Anderson Cooper was on HBO. When I saw that in, like, a TV listing, I was like, I don't care.
The only reason I know that is because I happened to be watching Kelly and Michael, and mm-hmm. he was the host, and they started yammering on about that.
So there's really no reason for Anderson Cooper to work.
None.
Yeah.
Except that he happens to be really good at his job.
He's pretty good.
Right?
I mean, compared to the other people at CNN, he's fantastic.
Him and Wolf. That's all you got.
I don't like Wolf.
But the name is... doesn't matter.
Wolf Blitzer's a good name for someone who's going to be in a situation room.
Yeah. I think that the first time I heard Wolf Blitzer, I was in high school, and it was in the Gulf War. And I thought they were kidding.
Oh, yeah.
For a good month, I thought they were kidding about Wolf Blitzer. I was like, that's not...
Yeah, I remember that. Because I was... freshman in college when that happened?
I dated myself by saying that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to be 1 year older, I guess. I was a freshman in college, and that was the first time I remember watching that much news.
Yeah, I was like... and
because I was like, when is the draft going
to
happen?
I'm like, I didn't give a shit about the war. I was like, when do I have to go to this thing? And when do I have to get a ticket to Toronto?
Yeah.
That was essentially...
Yeah. Oh, I apologize.
That's all right.
I didn't turn my...
That's why you're fifth on the list.
That's why. Because I forget to turn my thing into...
I was convinced that would happen to me first, but okay.
Anyway, yeah, I remember I was sitting in a basement the, like, night... that they were doing
coverage. Where did you go to college?
Well, I went to college at NYU. But the war thing happened over
not
the summer.
Not at NYU.
Not at NYU or while I was there. I was back home.
Oh, yeah,
I was in my friend's basement. And me and all my buddies, I worked at the local video store. So I'd grab some choice films.
Sure.
Like, basically, it was like trying to find the movies with the most female nudity.
Yeah. They didn't have, what's that site where they tell you how long into a movie?
Oh, like Mr. Skin?
Mr. Skin is what it's called.
Yeah.
They didn't have that yet.
No.
Or the internet, for that matter.
No, not really.
So that, we
not
were
really. Yeah, that was just a dream in Al Gore's head, I guess. but we were all in the bit, and I had rented the cook, the thief, his wife, and her lover.
Sure.
I'd taken that because nobody.
That was hot that summer.
Nobody ever rented that movie in my hometown, so it was always available. And I heard there was sex in it. So I brought that. And so we were watching the war thing, all kind of wondering, are we going to have to join the army now? And then when that was over and we were frazzled and kind of drunk on Budweiser, then we put on The Cook, The Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover. That was not the elixir I hoped it would be.
I know for a fact that my friends and I asked ourselves that exact question, and it was a resounding no before it even came out of our mouth that we were not joining the army. And it's not because we're unpatriotic. It's just that I don't like getting shot.
No. For me, it's definitely, I'm the same way. It's cowardice.
Yeah.
But... And maybe reason. I don't know.
Maybe, like, if Bob Hope did a thing, I would go do that. Like a tour.
You do a USO tour?
Yeah, sure. But okay. I'm not picking up a gun for...
No. No, I agree. But I was more worried at that time that they were going to, you know, reinstate the draft.
Yeah, as we all were. There was a couple of my friends that actually went. And that was nuts. I was just like, no thanks.
Yeah.
Tell me what it's like.
See, yeah. Yeah, no.
This took a dark turn.
Yeah.
Right away.
I feel very depressed.
I think we should pivot.
Well, it's your show. I don't know. I'm just answering questions.
Yeah. I see you have a... Is that an Emmy?
That is an Emmy. There's two of them in here. Can you find the other one?
Yes. What are they for?
They're for my father-in-law.
Oh, yeah. What's he do?
Well, he passed away, which is why we have his Emmys at this point. We inherited the Emmys. Nobody else in the family really wanted to take them, so we're like, yeah, we'll take his Emmys.
That's a great conversation.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, exactly. He was a variety television show director, and one of them is for the Julie Andrews Hour.
Oh, cool.
Which was a TV show that he directed, and the other one is for a John Denver special
that
he directed.
I probably watched that when I was six.
Probably. I'm not sure which special it was, but I think it was
I don't want to rain on your parade.
Yeah.
They're all the same thing.
No, but this one was special.
It was a very special special.
It was in Colorado, dead of winter.
Oh.
And they constructed a whole like bubble, They made it summer or spring in the bubble.
Oh, that's cool.
No, it wasn't like a little bubble.
He actually
it was
had
a giant
skill.
Bubble.
He deserved that Emmy.
I guess so. Have you ever seen that picture of Steve Martin playing the banjo with a butterfly on his nose?
Yes.
It's kind of an iconic photograph. That's from that special. And he was there and he witnessed it.
Then I saw that.
Yeah.
Because I know I saw that special.
Yeah. So there you go. Uh-huh. You've seen... And I used to watch Solid Gold, and that's what I learned, was that he directed a lot of Solid Gold.
He did Gold. Solid Golds. Mm-hmm. I watched that too.
Yeah. So, yeah, you saw his work. Wow. And he was a Hee-Haw guy for a long time.
Probably watched Hee-Haw. A bunch of those too.
Yeah, yeah. That, wow. I probably watched those with my grandfather. Nobody else.
Yeah, it would be mostly if my grandma was staying with us.
Yeah.
And there was no remote. Let's put it, my dad threw a pillow at the back of my head, and I had to change one of four channels. Because there was 2, 4, 13, and U. That was about it.
Uh-huh.
Because this was before cable.
Well, didn't you or you have 13. Like a couple? Like the VHF was the network stuff, and the UH, am I getting that
well,
right?
Yeah, you had to do, there was two levers. And I think one you had... To put it once you put it on you,
it was like
you had a couple of different levers down here, and then you had to mess with the rabbit ears
because it was like AM/FM, right? So
yeah.
VHF was like FM, so it had like all the network stuff, and that stuff came in pretty clearly.
Yeah,
and you didn't have to mess with too much stuff. I don't know why, but then the UHF, which Weird Al Yankovic did a whole film about, but that was where the independent channels, where you could see the movies. They put movies. That were unedited on those channels.
That was much more subversive.
In Massachusetts, we had Channel 56 and Channel 38. And they would play unedited, like at midnight. They'd play like My Tutor with all the boobs and stuff in it.
See, we didn't have that.
Or Friday the 13th.
We were in Ohio, and that just didn't fly in Ohio.
I don't know how it flew in Massachusetts either, to be quite frank. But they were getting around something.
Do you remember getting cable for the first time in your life?
No.
I do.
I mean, I didn't get any... Well, out here, when I moved to Los Angeles, I got cable.
That was the first time you got cable?
Yeah, I never had cable before. I mean, my town didn't get cable till after I was gone.
I think I was, I want to say 9 or 10,
mm-hmm.
and they had the cable box. There was only like 30 channels, but it was a huge deal because you were used to 5 or 6 channels, and they had, the remote was still tethered to the box, so you would have to go only, you'd had to move the couch mm-hmm. to wherever the remote reached to, and I just remember this because they had an all cartoon channel. And I would wake up at like 5 in the morning to watch cartoons as much as I possibly could before school. And I thought it was like crack to a an 8 or 9 year old. I was like, this is like brand new. And they had like totally cool cartoons. And I would sit there and like me and like 2 other friends had cable and we would just sit there and berate people who didn't.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
They had a... I don't know what it was, but it was like a satellite situation. That was the closest thing to cable you could get in my town. And it was only the super rich people who had that.
Oh, we were not anywhere near rich. So it must have been cheap.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what cable bills were back then, but we didn't have it. I didn't see MTV till I was in college.
I remember I remember that when it first came out.
Yeah. Well, everybody was talking about it. Their competition was V66, it was called. And it was a Channel 66 on the UHF. And they played videos, but it was, you know, not a cable show. It was, like, over the airwaves.
Huh. I just remember there was... The cable company wouldn't carry MTV in... At the time, we lived in just north of Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And the high school DJ of my sister's school locked himself... In the radio booth,
uh-huh.
and played "I Want My MTV" until the cops came and broke the door down and dragged him off. And so, not too long after that, the town got MTV.
Wow!
Yeah, and it was like a moon landing if you lived in Carmel, Indiana, which is where I lived at the time. And everybody was, like, driving by, so they could see. You couldn't see the guy, so I don't know why they drove by, but for some reason they wanted to be involved.
They just wanted to know.
Yeah. But, and then what I didn't know would happen later on, my wife is related to Martha Quinn.
Really?
Who came to my wedding, and she's great. She's very nice. But my cousin, who was a DJ, and he's, like, 8 or 9 years older than me, freaked out. Like, for him, it was like me meeting like Paul Newman or somebody.
Right.
He freaked out, and he just and I was like, dude, Patrick, come here. You gotta stop. Like, you're stalking her now. It's weird. Like, yeah. But he was completely. I guess that was his huge star that he just lost his mind about. It was crazy.
Well,
it was fun to watch though.
Yeah, that does sound fun to watch.
Yeah.
I was at a wedding once with James Taylor.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't follow him around, though.
Did you play the harmonica for him?
I wasn't doing that yet.
Just slobbered.
I just started playing the harmonica. Can you imagine if I just like, yo, James, check this out.
You just like sounded like an asthmatic. Just like.
Yeah, I should have done that.
That's a regret. I fell asleep at a James Taylor concert once.
That's what they're supposed to do, right?
I tried.
It's not supposed to, like, get you pumped.
No, I had some drinks before with my girlfriend at the time, and we drove up and got the blanket and the whole 9 yards.
Sure, sure.
About 3 songs in, I just couldn't do it anymore. I was done. I woke up probably, I think, like an hour into it.
He's very relaxing.
Very relaxing.
Yeah. I mean, I liked James Taylor's music, but
Who's this guy's name?
This is Ginny.
That was a cat, by the way, I'm referencing to.
Yeah, she wants me to throw her bracelet.
Ah.
Which I just did.
He did.
Just past your head.
Just past my head. Zipped.
She'll get it, and then she'll bring it back to me.
So it's a retriever.
She's a retrieving cat.
I don't know why.
It's not something that happens normally with cats, I guess, but it's entertaining.
It is entertaining. It just happened for
those. Yeah, she just dropped the and then she'll meow incessantly until you throw it.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. And if you don't throw it, she'll meow and then start demanding you scratch her, and then she can't. She's insatiable, I guess is the word I'm looking for. Yeah. Yeah, she's all right. She's the girl. There's two other cats, two boys. Her brother and then an old one. Yeah, a lot of cats.
Now you have I'm sitting right next to a director's chair with your name on it.
Yeah.
Do you direct?
No.
No, you never have? Do you want to?
No.
That's amazing.
I mean, I do a web series, which you should come do sometime soon.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
The movie
thing. Just Film Pigs.
Absolutely, yeah. Making fun of movies.
Yeah.
I've seen it. It's funny.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you should come do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But this is a pretty hefty schedule for me.
No, I know. You have this show, and I don't want to get in the way of it. But, you know, if you have a Tuesday night free.
Yeah, yeah.
We shoot twice a month on Tuesday evenings. It's like, it's usually the second. And,
right on.
Or the first and third. I can't remember. It's some Tuesdays. But I'll let you know, and you can come do it. But I can't remember why I brought that up now. I brought that up for a reason. Oh, yeah. I sometimes direct. But that it's not something that I want to do. It's something I have to do.
Yes. It's out of necessity.
Yeah.
Not for passion.
No.
I can understand that.
I do. It's not my favorite thing. It's a lot to... Overseeing things... I mean, if I was to join the military, as we discussed, I would have to be in the front lines because I wouldn't want to have to overview and be responsible for everybody getting killed.
I would be a drone pilot. That would be anything with a video game involved.
That's a smart. I would do that, but then you're essentially, like skilled front lines thing, just taking orders, sending your drones in.
I just want to have a joystick and some drinks.
Sure. Did you ever see that movie, Joystick? During the 80s?
No.
Remember that movie with Joe Don Baker?
I did not see it.
You never saw the movie Joysticks?
I never saw it. I gotta see it.
Didn't you want to, like, see naked girls and sex comedies in the 80s?
But I and wasn't aware missed, Joysticks was...
You missed Joysticks?
...was the route I had to take.
Oh.
I was busy watching Porky's.
Oh. Yeah. Do you watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yes.
I was just talking about this with Janet Varney. They did that episode this season where they were making fun of 80s movies. Did you see that one?
I haven't seen it.
That's really funny. I don't want to ruin it because you just said
go ahead, Porky's. Ruin it.
There's just like a whole bit. They actually have the actor. They get a bunch of those like recognizable actors from those old movies, but it's the guy who was the star of Hot Dog the Movie, and he's in it, and they do a whole thing where he's like looking through a peephole in the shower. That's and then awesome. He talks about stuffing his dick through it, and the rest of the cast is like, no, that's illegal.
I have a terrible, terrible story about Hot Dog the Movie.
Okay, good.
So, my best friend at the time, Chris Bellani, was my next door neighbor, and he came over, and he spent the night at my house. It was like a Saturday night, no special event, just we usually one or the other went over to each other's house. Sure. So, I had Cinemax.
Skinamax.
Skinamax should have been the real name, but yes. At the time, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. My parents were asleep. I put on Hot Dog the Movie.
Uh-huh.
And we were watching it, and we're like, oh my God, we couldn't have been more than 10 or 11 years old. And we're like, it's like stealing when you get to watch that.
Sure.
But what I didn't know is my dad was in the kitchen watching us watch that. And I got busted. Not only did I get busted, I had to have the talk the next morning after that.
And okay, so what did your dad say to you in the talk?
Nothing informative at all. He just said, I don't want you watching that kind of smut.
Mm-hmm.
There are things you're going to want... Like, he didn't even go to details. He was like, there are things you're going to want to do to girls. Don't. Essentially, and I was like, what?
There are things you're going to want to do to girls, don't, like, and you don't know what that is.
Like, touching their breasts and stuff, and I was mortified, and I'm just like, dude, I just want to go play basketball or anywhere. I'll go do my homework, please. I don't care if it's Saturday morning. I'll do it. But it was terrible. It was so awkward, and I learned less about the birds and the bees after it was over than when before. Like, I could have just watched Hot Dog the Movie and learned all I really needed to know.
Instead, I just had this really...
And it would have, like, really long, awkward pauses. I think he was waiting for me to ask questions. And I was just like, I wouldn't look him in the eye. Like, I would just stare at our kitchen table. And my mom had those woven placemats. And I was just sitting there picking at them. Like, I didn't want to look up. And I think I saw my sister, like, walk by, like, a couple times just laughing her ass off. She's, like, 4.5 years older than me. And she was just, like, cackling and yell at her to go outside. Oh, it was so bad.
Oh, that is a terrible story.
It was...
I'm very sorry that happened to you.
It's a wonder that I'm a married man at this point.
And you just wanted to see some... skiing hijinks.
I'm just like, look, they're just boobs. Skiing and boobs. What could go wrong?
Ski boobs.
I think Shannon Tweed was in that. Was Shannon Tweed in that?
Probably.
She was in all of them.
She was in a lot of them.
But
there was so many of those movies.
Oh, my God.
So many.
I don't even remember half of them.
I remember titles. I mean, I remember the title Hard Bodies. I don't remember what happens. I feel like most of them... Like, except, like, the ones that you really remember, I feel like the lower grade of something that's already pretty low grade, those ones all seem to take place on Venice Beach. I feel like...
I know that there was probably 20 to 30 spring break variations of, you know...
Hey, it's Animal
the
House.
The straight-laced guy goes down, meets the crazy guy, they end up in a hotel room... And they get the nerd laid somehow. That's pretty much 20 of the 30.
Right. Yeah, that's...
And I know Anthony Edwards was in one with Johnny Depp.
Oh. Was that Anthony Edwards?
I think it was Anthony. Or was it... No. It was Tim Robbins. Tim Robbins was in it with...
I don't know if Tim Robbins... Tim Robbins... Okay. All these guys were in this. But Anthony Edwards was in Revenge of the Nerds.
Yes, I know that. I know. That's...
Johnny Depp was in Private Resort, but I don't know
that's the one Tim Robbins was in.
I
saw it like a year ago, and I was like, is that freaking Tim Robbins?
It's possible.
He must have been right before he did Top Gun and had a career.
He was in another one called Fraternity Vacation. I remember that.
Maybe that was it.
But Johnny Depp's not in that one.
That's weird that he got pigeonholed in the teen romp.
I mean... He's tall, good-looking kid.
That's all it took. How tall is he? He's 6'3". Put him in there.
Put him in the show.
We're going to rack focus off him every time. It's
going to
be great.
Yeah, I don't know. But if you could get that work, there was a lot of it.
God, are you kidding
me? You're the right age, yeah.
I'd do it now.
Yeah.
My wife wouldn't even care. She'd be like, is it at least scale? Go. Have fun.
Well, you know, maybe that could be a resurgence of the genre, but instead of it being about horny kids, it's about horny middle-aged men who can't really get it up anymore.
It'd be the saddest one. And you know damn well they'd offer it to Will Ferrell and you'd be like, God damn it, I was just close to getting that.
But they gave it to
now,
Will Ferrell.
Answer me this. Have you ever had a love scene in anything you've ever done?
Okay. It was mostly post-coital.
Okay.
I was in a threesome post-coitally in an independent film when I was in a post-coital scene with Dee Wallace.
Wow.
In a movie called Fuzz Track City, indie movie.
Sure.
And then last year, I did a show called You're the Worst, in which I doggy style fucks my wife on the show.
I have not seen that episode.
No, I guess not.
thus the question. All right. What did you think? Did you think it was the worst, most awkward, terrible thing that you've ever experienced in your life?
It was one... I'm not going to call it worst. I don't think worst, but it definitely was awkward and terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
Luckily, everybody involved... The producers are cool people. The makeup people were very helpful. Wardrobe, of course, provided me with the appropriate cock sock, as they called it, which is a bit of a misnomer because it's not just for your cock. You have to jam your balls in there, too, to keep it real. And because of the way they were shooting it, like, I had to not have clothes on. So
it was behind.
In between takes, I was wearing a robe and the sock. And then when
very Mark
the cameras were rolling, I had to remove the robe. But I don't look. I don't have abs. So I feel like I'm doing... I mean, I have abs, but they're buried under several layers of fat.
A layer of fat.
Yeah.
Just like mine.
Yeah. I call it the zombie survival layer.
I have, like... You can see the top ones, and the rest are hibernating. Like... You could a sad remnant of a six pack that has now just become like a line and some burgers.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Although mine's probably more beers.
Yeah, well,
it's more beers than burgers. Although I like burgers, but I mean, it was just sort of weird to be naked and on a set like that in front of everybody.
Oh, it's terrible.
And then I'm fucking her from behind like it's a fuck scene, you know. To call it a love scene is probably not. This is a fuck scene. So I'm fucking her from behind, and Janet Vardy, who I just mentioned, is the woman who played my wife. Now she was wearing, you know, pregnant lady underwear, so she like lingerie underwear, so she didn't have to be naked, but I had to be in. You know, I'm behind her, and all I want to make sure is that my terrified limp junk does not swing too hard and hit her in an inappropriate place. Like, that's what, like, and so I have to sell it. I can't be too far back.
Time your balls so they don't smack her in a offensive way. Yeah, this is a terrible story.
Yeah, this is all. This is the truth of it. Well, and
stay in school, kids.
Stay in school. Don't act ever. Yeah, it was, but you know, it turned into what was a very funny scene. It was funny.
I would imagine.
And luckily, my character was, despite the fact that my character was having sex, I was also very upset and in an emotional state. So, because I got to play that. If I had to play, like, really into it, like, sex, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it wasn't comedic, I feel like I would have been in a lot more trouble.
I did do that once. Non-comedic. First of all, it was a really low-budget film.
Uh-huh.
And it was hot as hell.
Where'd you shoot? Where were you shooting?
I think we're in Lancaster or some nonsensical place in a trailer.
Good
like
God.
Like I just won the lottery trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a wife beater. I think it was one of my first things I ever did, and I was probably 24.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could still play the guy that could get laid.
Sure.
But this girl was like this. There was a bunch of, like, I'd never done anything like this. So I was just, it was incredibly awkward. I was scared.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't want to screw it up, essentially. And the girl started getting into it and choked me.
What?
In the middle of it. Grabbed my throat, and I was like, whoa, what's up? Like.
And that was not a scripted moment?
No. She just got in. She's like, what? Yeah, let's get in. Let's do this. And I was like, okay. Like, and then, like, you forget that there's a grip's balls, like, 36 inches to your, like, and then, I kept snapping out of it and going back into it, and, like, it was really awkward. And then, like, the next scene, I had to die, because the husband comes home, and, so, by the way, that's me cutting my own throat.
So,
it was very strange.
That sounds really weird.
And I keep seeing this woman, and this has been... 15 years since this happened. Probably more. But I keep seeing her at auditions and it's awkward still.
Oh, yeah?
Because I don't know why it's awkward.
But is it awkward for her, do you think?
I don't think so.
It's just your awkwardness?
I think it's just me having my own backstory to this whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez, I'm sorry. That's an interesting, though, choice for actor.
I guess it worked. To make it
in the moment. Yeah, sure, but just to choke somebody without discussing it first.
Yeah, that
like in real life, that's really something you should talk about.
Yeah, like, hey, I'm going to choke you out in the...
Great, so we should pick some safe words.
No, I'm just going to choke you out.
I'm just going to choke you out.
When your eyes roll back, that's when I'll stop.
I'll stop, yeah. It'll feel good, trust me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was strange.
That's, wow. What's that movie called? Can you tell me? You don't remember?
The Silencing?
The Silencing.
I don't know if that's the one.
Did you see the movie?
I've done a lot of bad movies.
Did you see it?
No.
Oh, you never saw it?
I didn't even go to the premiere. It was the kid from the OC, Adrian Brody. Or, no, what's the guy's name? That was like the big star of it.
Okay.
I don't.
What was it? Was it a thriller?
You don't know? Three scenes.
Oh, you didn't read the whole thing?
No. I met this director at a workshop.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, oh, I got this part. It's going to be great. Fantastic. And he gave me the pages. I was like, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
And I never heard from him. Like, it wasn't like a... I didn't think that, you know, I was going to get a first look deal out of this thing.
Right, so. Right.
But
did they pay you?
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
But it was like sag low budget.
Right.
It was like $100. $100 or something like that.
Yeah.
And copy.
Yeah. Yeah, not going to use that.
Not going to use the choking.
Not going to use the sex
fetish.
Scene.
Ooh, look, fetish video.
Yeah.
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 What was your best job?
My best job. Well, I really do like doing You're the Worst. It's a great job. That I'm getting paid for. I loved doing Fuzz Track City, but I didn't make any money doing that.
We rarely do.
That was just a chance for me to play the lead in a movie, which, you know, I was like, if I don't do this, I may die not having done that. So, no, I've had that experience, so that was good.
It's strange to carry a film, don't you think?
It was very terrifying.
Yeah.
And it took me a little while to relax.
Because the buck stops with you, and if you have a bad day...
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I was lucky in a sense, because it was a private detective story, and it's quirky, so... Eventually, I realized, oh, I'm essentially just playing a straight man to all these quirky characters. So I was able to, like, sort of look more, feel more like a supporting actor in every scene. And does that make sense?
Yeah. No, I understand.
I felt less pressure that way.
Yeah.
When I made it about everybody else.
All right.
Well, so.
I'm going to go with you on this.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not, obviously not, yeah. Not, no, I'm not a Mark Wahlberg. I'm, you know,
I've been cut out of almost everything I've ever been in.
What is the highest?
I'll tell you a story. Okay, my first big movie that I was ever in, was called Primary Colors, which had Billy Bob Thornton and Emma Thompson and
John Travolta. John Travolta,
and was directed by Mike Nichols.
Right, and John Travolta played Bill Clinton.
Clinton-esque.
Oh, right. It was just
esque. It was written by Anonymous.
And Kathy Bates was in it?
Yes.
It?
Yeah. Okay. And it was pretty much all stars. So I did a one-line part.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the second job I did after I got my SAG card type of deal. I was still a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it. I went home that summer and told everybody that would listen to me within earshot that I was in a major motion picture. And
seems reasonable.
And it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Because in Dayton, Ohio, when you get in a movie, people think you're the shit.
It's the thing.
So I'm sitting there with my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife. And I'm like, oh, it's, you know, I say, right this way, Mr. Stanton. And then we walk down a hall and blah, 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 blah. And so I'm waiting. And it comes to the part, and I'm like, I think this is it right here. And it just snaps to the thing, and it all it shows me is me walking out the door. And I looked at her, and I just kind of started to slide down my seat.
That's
and
rough.
I was like, oh no.
That's rough.
And it wasn't that I got cut out, it was that I had told every single person in my hometown that I was in this stupid fucking movie, and now I wasn't. And but it's still on IMDb. They gave me the credit.
Oh, that's good.
I never knew until like a couple years ago. I'm like, oh, look
at that.
But yeah.
Well, you're in it.
Yeah, sort of.
There you go.
My head.
Well, your head.
But that happened a lot. That happened a lot to me. Like,
well, that's sort of the danger of... Oh, there goes my answering machine. That's sort of the danger of being a person who... Well, Dabney Coleman said I was a bit player. So I guess if that's what Dabney Coleman defines me as, that's what I am. But that's sort of the danger. If you're in just one scene, you have a few lines. Very easy to get cut out.
Yeah, I've been in a series of things that have been cut out and a series of television shows that have been subsequently canceled right after I was on it.
So your episode didn't air.
I'm kryptonite in this town.
That's happened to me, though. I did a show with Al Madrigal. You know who that dude is?
I think I do.
He was a Daily Show correspondent for a while.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was his show, you know, and he's a stand-up. So it was like this hybrid show. It was like half talk show, half sitcom.
Okay.
And he was like a kid who had a public access show in his garage, and they'd do that stuff like a real talk show. He'd actually interview celebrities. And Cheech Marin was his dad. And I had a really good time shooting it. Huh. It was really cool. And I think they shot like 7 or 8 episodes, and the network just pulled the plug, and they never aired.
I had one like that. I was in a show called Girls Club, and it was a David E. Kelly show. And I had done an episode of Ally McBeal, and then I had done an episode of, I think it was, what the hell was that? Boston. No.
Boston Legal.
Public.
Boston Public. Oh,
so
yeah.
David E. Kelly had a series of shows on, and it was getting ridiculous to the point where he had like 7 shows on it. And people,
right.
I think people, there was a big backlash. So Girls Club was the last one in this series. And it had like Gretchen Mol,
mm-hmm.
and a girl who's on Grey's Anatomy now, and this other girl who was on 90210. They were the 3 main lawyers. And I played the guy in the office, like the office paralegal.
Okay.
And I'm a young kid. This is... I don't have much credits, and I thought this was my...
break.
I thought this was it.
Sure.
Like, David E. Kelly likes me.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
So I go... I'm going down there, and I'm like, well, this was easy. I guess I'll be a TV star for now.
Yeah, like, why not?
So they shot, like, 13 of them. I was in a bunch of them, but... so I Fox, for some... in all their wisdom, put the coverage of the World Series... preempted this show. So they had the premiere of Girls Club, then the next week they had 2 weeks of the World Series on the same fucking network. Like, they just cut it off and stopped marketing it. So it was canceled 3 episodes in. My episode aired once, and then the other ones never aired, so I could never get a hold of them.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, I didn't even watch the show, and I was on it. I was watching the World Series. I was like, oh my god. And so it was an interesting kind of lesson of how quickly the rug can be pulled out from under you in this town.
Yeah, you never...
But it was just...
You never really know. Man, if I had a dime for every time somebody said, this is it, you're gonna blow up after this.
Well, there's been a legitimate couple of times when I was like, okay, this should be it.
Right.
Not the bullshit talking yes men around you. You're like, okay, when I was on a couple different shows for 3 seasons, and I was like, okay, when this should happen now.
Right.
Like, I should get a real agent with a real manager, and let's go, because I'm tired of this horseshit.
Yeah.
And the first one was Reno 911.
Oh, sure.
I kept recurring on that show, but those guys were fantastic. Did you ever do that one?
No, I auditioned for them, and I must have said the wrong thing. And I think it was saying to Ben Grant that we had done the cherry orchard together at NYU, and both had small parts in it. So we spent most of our time backstage doing Sense Memory crack, which was ridiculous because I'd never done crack. But that was our joke, that we'd go out into the scene high on crack. But he looked at me like I had four heads, had no recollection of it. And I've since heard him talk on podcasts about how he was tripping balls most of the time he was at NYU. So he probably just literally doesn't.
Probably just was high.
Yeah. But there was something about that that, I think I blew it by trying to be personal.
I think that was one of the, that was one of my favorite jobs. Just because they would hand you an outline of the scenes, and it was just literally an outline of this scene, this scene, this scene. The director would come up, who's a guy that did the state with them.
Was it Michael?
I don't remember. He looked like Jesus. He had a big beard, super funny dude. But like he would walk up, and every time I was on the show, he'd go, "Okay, you're gonna start here. You gotta end there. Just be funny. Action." There was no like, and the series regulars were amazing. Cedric. And Niecy Nash was in a lot of them. They're all really funny. They're all like on the short list of every freaking comedy movie.
Yeah. Now. Were you in the movie?
I was not in the movie.
Were you mad about that?
No, because Ben in particular was really nice to me.
Uh huh.
And I had written a pilot that I wanted to pitch to Comedy Central.
Uh huh.
And, he was super nice about it. He's like, "Oh, just have your manager send it." I'm like, "Ha, don't have a manager." See, you're a CAA, and you think that everybody's with CAA.
Everybody, yeah, that's not how it works.
So he walked it into Comedy Central, and that was the year that Dave Chappelle went on his hiatus to Africa.
Right.
And they had a $50 million hole in their budget. And so what they wanted to do is narrow it down to like 10 or 12 pilot presentations, and they liked mine, so they said, "You got 2 weeks, go make this pilot presentation." So I just got the best improv friends that I had at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We went over to, you know, Matt Corboy.
I know that name. I probably know him.
He's an actor, we've been friends for like ever. I think almost 20 years, and we got some people together and shot it like in like 4 or 5 days. And then we would like one of the scenes, we snuck into Kohl's,
uh-huh, in
the shoe department.
Sure.
And just shot a whole scene without anybody knowing it.
Like guerrilla style? How'd you do that?
Just did it.
Were you shooting on like phones or something?
No, we had an actual camera.
Wow.
We just walked in. Everybody was completely indifferent to us. And so we just shot it. We were like, screw it. We get in trouble. We did the same thing in Radio Shack.
And they didn't do anything?
They did, like, the fourth take. Finally, somebody was like, "What the hell are you guys doing?" We're like, "We got it." We just walked out. But I cut it together, and it came down to my show and a show that the Groundlings had put, a group of the Groundlings. The director was Damon Jones.
Okay.
Who's a Groundling. And Regan Burns and some other guys were on that show. It was called Halfway Home or Halfway House or something. Uh-huh. I don't know. It ran for like a year, and then it got nixed. But that was my Comedy Central. Like, Ben, that was all Ben that helped me do that.
Wow, that's cool. That's really cool.
But
nobody ever helped me.
So I could never, ever badmouth those dudes. They're awesome.
No.
So.
No, I wasn't asking you to badmouth. I'll badmouth this movie. It wasn't very good, so.
There's probably too many cooks in the kitchen on that one.
Yeah, it seemed wildly unfocused. Yeah. But, you know, that's okay. It doesn't always work.
It's hard to get an improv movie to work, period.
Yeah, I think so.
I
mean, I'm not even that big on, like, the Christopher Guest ones that everybody loves so much.
I liked a couple of them.
I liked Guffman, and that was about all.
Oh, shit. Kick that right under there.
That's all right. She's got lots of other bracelets that she can retrieve.
What were the other ones?
The Christopher Guest ones?
Yeah.
There's Best in Show.
Best in Show.
There's
For Your Consideration. A Mighty Wind.
For Your Consideration, yeah. Yeah, I wasn't into the... I liked Waiting for Guffin because even though the characters were often, you know, absurd and ridiculous, I don't know, there was something more grounded about it.
I just...
And it felt more like a love letter to community theater versus Best in Show felt more like we're just making fun of the idiots who go to dog shows, which is fair because dog shows are stupid. But
got it. But one thing that, as a commercial actor, you know, Christopher started doing commercial campaigns, and so it took on a whole new life of its own. Of every time you got close in one of these things, did you ever do stuff with him?
I've never worked for a guest.
No, nor have I.
I've never even gotten in a room with him.
I've been in his callbacks half a dozen times, and it's like this is his favorite thing to do when you're funny.
Uh huh.
Keep going. That's all he says. Keep going. Keep going. And you're like, okay. And you just go and go and go. Yeah. But yeah, one of my friends got in one of his campaigns. Oh, shit. And that's what he said the whole time. He would be like, keep going.
Keep going. Well, on the set?
No. This was his callback
experience. Oh.
But I don't even remember what ad campaign that was. I think it was AT&T or something like that, where they're all around a conference table, and you had like five guys that were in his movies, and then the two lucky bastards that ended up making $300,000 that year because they shot 25 of them.
Right.
And you're like, okay, awesome.
That's cool. Were you in the Groundlings or anything? Or do you UCB or anything?
I started doing Second City in college. And then I was in the first class to come through Iowa West.
Okay.
I did a couple Groundlings.
That would be Improv Olympic?
Improv Olympic. But now it's not because the Olympics sued Improv Olympics because they wouldn't allow them to use the name Olympics.
What?
So now it's I.O. Yeah, that's just the most asinine fucking thing I've ever heard in my life. I thought they were kidding when I heard this story, and they're like, no, they tried to sue Sharna Halpern in Chicago because it was Improv Olympic, Chicago, Improv Olympic, West, or L.A.,
mm-hmm.
and they made us stop using Olympic.
That's ridiculous.
It's beyond ridiculous. So it's I.O. Chicago and I.O. West now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So
I was in the first class to go through that.
Uh-huh.
And then I've been performing at I.O. and Second City for, you know, 15, 16 years, something like that.
And you still do it?
I do. I have one group in particular that when we're all in town...
You'll get together.
Once every month, once every couple months, we get together. And it's not... We don't have a theater anymore because... As I'm sure you know, improv is a young man's game, and all of a sudden you're the old guy there, and like, so we were up at Second City for about a year, and then we were at I.O. whenever we could get a slot, and then lately we've been going to Westwood,
mm-hmm.
and I like doing shows for drunk college kids because they're an easy laugh.
Sure, they're just there to have a good
really
time.
Be that funny, yeah. You can just. Right. Drop an F-bomb every now and then. They start giggling, and they're like, okay, that was easy.
Yeah, that's cool. I was just talking to Jonathan Mangum, you know that guy?
Yeah.
He was complaining about modern-day young improvisers.
Jonathan's been nonstop.
Yeah.
Since the 90s.
No. Obviously. He's the real deal and all that. But it was just funny what he was saying because it's like, because improv, and you have all these, you have UCB and the Groundlings and I.O. and all these things that are pathways into, you know, the business, quote unquote. So a lot of people are joining those for that reason. You know what I mean? And they're not necessarily the greatest improvisers.
True.
Is what,
well, like when we started,
yeah.
My first coach was Neil Flynn,
uh-huh.
who's on The Middle,
uh-huh.
and was on Scrubs.
Yeah, yeah.
My level two teacher was Pete Gardner, who's now on My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
One of my teachers was Jason Weiner, who's now the executive producer of... Life in Pieces, and he was a director on Modern Family, and
uh-huh.
like all these guys were just drunk improvisers.
Sure, sure. Like, and now they're
and now they've been banging around this town for so long that people are like, oh yeah, they're great. And you know, I came along 5 to 10 years after those guys. So
right,
I'm assuming that in 5 years
that it's just gonna kick in.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't do the. I mean, I took a lot of improv classes and stuff, and I did. I was more of a sketch guy, I guess.
See, I went to the Groundlings, and at the time it was right around when Mad TV was disintegrating,
mm-hmm.
and there was no. That was the pipeline. That was your end game. Was to get in the Sunday company or the main company and then get shoved onto Mad TV, or that was or, the goal.
Yeah, or Saturday Night Live, if you were well, really lucky, I guess.
Happen anymore, but unless you're 25. But yeah, at the time I was like, okay, that's the end game, and I started doing that, and then they kind of took away the end game, and I was like, why am I doing the Groundlings anymore? Like, I really enjoy doing long-form improv, so I just went back and did that.
Did that, yeah.
Yeah, and I wasn't. I don't give a shit about writing sketches. Like,
yeah,
I'll do them.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I can go be funny in any number of different ways if you want to pay me. But I'm not going to sit in a writing lab and slave away for 6 months because you know, and pay you $600.
Well, yeah. I mean, as I you know, ever since I graduated college, I've done everything I can to avoid paying people for the opportunity to do whatever.
Yeah.
And I have, but I've avoided it. And I never did the Groundlings or anything like that, mostly because I'm stubborn and I didn't want to give them all that money.
Yeah, I thought... I just wanted to see if I could get to the writing thing and see what would... And I did what I wanted to do there, and I was like, I quit.
Yeah.
And... It was because at the time I was working, you know, I was booking commercials, I was booking television shows, and I was taking classes from people that weren't. And I'm like,
sure.
Well, why am I listening to you?
Yeah.
Like,
what is it?
I'm earning a living doing this, and you're telling me that I'm every one of my instincts is off. And I just beat you out at that callback that we were like.
Well, I think that's part of the reason that I was resistant to any sort of major school once I got out of my major school was that by the time I graduated NYU, I was like, so much of what I learned is complete hogwash. It's just nonsense, and it's not helpful, and it got in my way, and then I had to unlearn all that shit so I could get back to a place where I could actually serve a story and make some money.
Well, yeah, I actually guest lecture at USC a couple times a year. One of my friends has an on-camera class there, and they're teaching them shit. I mean, no offense to USC, but...
I don't care.
Well, somebody's going to hear this. But anyway, we go and I teach them practical application of what it actually means to be an actor, as opposed to, you know, most of this, which is kind of mind-boggling to me, most of the USC and UCLA curriculums are all theater-based. And I'm like, you have a film school 20 feet that way.
Yeah.
You're surrounded by an industry that drives this economy, and you're not teaching these kids how to do what they're going to inevitably have to do in 6 months.
Right.
And they're completely unprepared. I mean, that's great that you're teaching them to be theater actors, but you're in Los Angeles, and getting people to see theater in Los Angeles is like kind of like having a physical. It's impossible. Like,
yeah, it's a pain in the neck, and it's never worth it. Yeah, that was one of my things about NYU, because that's what they were teaching us. And they're also teaching us theater as if there was only one way to do it. You know what I mean? As if just because Stanislavski, you know, wrote a bunch of books, and then the group theater like took it up and then broke up and blah blah blah. None of that shit did anything for any of my performances.
No,
like
that's
like
in 1965 when people gave a shit.
Sure. Yeah.
But not when you have to go and make a goofy face for a Toyota ad.
No.
That's not really going to help you.
Yeah, you teach commercial acting. That's like a totally different ball of wax. I mean, it's the I always say it's the direct opposite of what Uta Hagen said and Stanislavski said, you know, behaving truthfully in imaginary circumstances. It's not. You're commercials is bizarre. Kind of doing the opposite of
that. Well, and so is like three camera, a lot of the three camera shows out there. I'm not going to say a network or a,
or a show.
But that being said, a lot of it is not anything that you will learn in school.
No.
Like, you think that no one teaches you how to act on a Disney show?
No. No. Well, because it's sort of the opposite of what they teach you.
Right.
Well, and it's also Disney shows, although I guess they're changing a little bit, but those shows are all about being loud and big, right?
I'm on a Nickelodeon show right now, so I'm not
gonna... Well, I've done the shows, and I don't think I'm speaking out of turn when I say it. I'm not saying this to insult the shows. That's the fucking direction I'm given on set.
Right.
I had a director say, you just need to be bigger. And I was like, dude, I feel as big as I can be right now with this stuff without it being horrible.
Well, yeah, so, I went years and years and years of auditioning for those shows and not getting them because I wouldn't go that big. Like, I would go as big as I could feel comfortable in my own skin with, and then I'd be like, that's what I'm going to give you, dude.
Yeah.
And I just wouldn't book them.
Yeah. That's generally what happens to me.
And then I got booked as the dad in one of these, and yeah, so.
So, but you found your way in it?
You know what? It was an odd process, because I was just coming off a show on HBO that I had done, and was as serious as an acting show and as high stakes as you could get.
Was this the...
It was
the,
Aaron Sorkin.
The newsroom?
Yeah. Like, there's no parallels to that show and the one I'm on now. None.
No.
Not a one. Except they're both on some kind of film. So,
they're recorded.
So I went in. My agent, my manager called me and they're like, you have this show that we want to put you on, or that they want to put you on tape for. I was like, all right, whatever. So, not thinking that that was going to be the next step of my career.
Yeah.
I went in probably not caring as much for, and little did I know giving a shit less was going to get me the part on this. I went in and I talked to this casting director. It was on the Paramount lot. I walked in and I started talking about television shows that we were watching. I didn't even really give a shit about the audition. I was like,
right.
So we talked for 20 minutes about, oh, I love this show. Oh, well, you should watch this show then. Oh my God, he's amazing in this. And the director's awesome. And I almost walked out, just happy with our conversation. I forgot that I hadn't auditioned yet. And I'm like, wow, this is great. Thanks, man. And she's like, we should read this. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. And I did it just with that kind of attitude, not caring at all.
Right.
And sure enough, that night I get a call. Yeah, you're in. You got it. And wow. I was like, of course.
Wow. It's so weird how that happens.
I've gone through dozens and dozens of those shows and failed miserably in the audition.
Well, most of the time I do, and at this point I'm hesitant to go out on most of them.
As was I.
Because I don't, like, the truth is I've done them. I'm not crazy about it. I did one for Amazon, but they do it differently.
Is it like, literally, is it?
It was, you know how they do their pilots and the audiences vote, and then so they did that. It's a show called Just Add Magic. It's about little girls who do magic. Yeah. It's cute, but when I went to the audition, that was the first thing the casting director said. She said, "This is no." She said, "Don't do that."
Oh, okay, cool.
You know, because I went in going, oh, "I gotta be big. I gotta be big," and she's like, "Don't be big. Just be real."
Huh.
And I was like, oh, okay. And I was, and I booked it. So I think maybe the big stuff, I have a hard time with it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
if it was different, if the shows were Maybe it's because it's a kid's show and they have a certain criteria, whatever, when they're writing it. And I don't know. But if something's, like, absurd, like, I can do big performances in a sketch, you know?
Sure.
But I it's just different intellectually for me, I guess.
There was a stigma attached to it for so long that I just wasn't, maybe I wasn't understanding it, maybe I wasn't grasping it, or maybe I didn't want to. Once I'm on set, I'm good. I'll go do, and you know.
Yeah.
And you're essentially, I found that all those shows are about the kids, they're always going to be about the kids, and that's the driving force of all the ratings and the marketing and the this and the that. So as a secondary guest star, recurring kind of guy, that my job is to push along the agenda of the kid's story.
Right.
And yeah, I'll be funny, but most of your stuff that you come up with on the fly or that's alternative to a script is going to be cut anyway because you have a very finite amount of time. And I find that, yeah, it's very hard to put your own spin on anything in a show like that.
Right.
It's so weird. My career's just always been the audition process. Like, when I get stuff, there's always a weird story behind it. It's always,
you didn't expect it or weren't caring.
Like, with the newsroom, I went out for the pilot, which was called something completely different. It was More As the Story Develops, I believe was the name of it.
Oh, okay, sure.
So I went out for the pilot for that. And the casting director, Fran Maisler, cast me in The Soloist, which was a Jamie Foxx movie.
The homeless guy
She had cast me in that and brought me in for the pilot, and I was like, oh, shit. Because I grew up on, you know, well, I didn't grow up on, but I've been watching Aaron Sorkin for...
You're a Sorkin fan. I love The West Wing.
So I probably put way too much pressure on myself. And I thought I did a good job, but you never know.
Right.
And Brian Husky, who's one of the founding members of UCB,
mm-hmm.
and he's on Veep.
Sure.
He booked my role.
Okay.
So he did the pilot. And then, for some reason, I don't know the whole story, but he was let go, or I think something happened where the network was pissed because he went out for Veep while he was still on the show, and it was competing with the time thing or whatever, I don't know.
Oh.
So he was let go without him knowing.
And this is a recurring guest star?
Yeah.
So he's not getting paid a series regular thing, and so he went out to get some more guest work. And
as we all do.
And they fired him?
Well,
why didn't they just offer him more money?
This is the funny thing. I talked to Brian, because I had shot like 4 or 5 episodes, and I saw him, we were both going out for Castle.
Uh-huh.
And we're at the producer's call, and we're stuck in the waiting room together, and I was like, I should talk to this guy, because he's going to find out sooner or later that I took his fucking role. So I'm like, hey, Brian, my name's Charlie. I just want you to know that I'm on the show that you were on. And he's like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, my agents told me that that show, that part went away. They lied to him.
Mm.
So he was pissed. So I don't know if he's still with that agency anymore, but it sounded like he wasn't going to be for long because he was mad. Like, and so I kind of opened up a hornet's nest there.
So, you probably should have just not done that, I guess.
I was like, oh, shit.
But you didn't want him to...
I didn't want him being mad at me thinking I had done something to steal something away from him, because I didn't. Because it was like me and Evan Arnold and a couple other guys were there at the final round. And I'd went out like on a Monday for my agent calling. He's like, oh, you got this thing that's an Aaron Sorkin. I'm like, I went out for that pilot. I didn't get it. What the fuck? Like, I don't want to go out again.
Right.
And so he's like, just go in and do it on a Monday. And Wednesday morning or Tuesday night, they're like, yeah, you got to produce this read tomorrow morning, Wednesday at Hollywood, where was that? Sunset Gower Studios.
Okay.
And so I'm like, okay, whatever. So I'm sitting there and Evan's there and we're, you know, doing our 20-minute sets in the... and we're shooting the shit. And all of a sudden I see Aaron Sorkin walk by. And I went, wait, what?
Yeah.
I was like, I didn't know he was going to be here. And now I'm in my own head.
That freaked you out.
I'm freaking out a little bit. So I'm like, all right, just put it out of your head. Don't look at him. Whatever.
Yeah.
So I walk in, and I'm reading with Aaron.
No.
And I went, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, I could deal with a lot. I just wasn't prepared for it. And I was like, okay. So I was like, Charlie, just do exactly what he fucking says. Don't do any more and leave. Because what I was hearing from the hallway was a lot of these guys, my part was like the funny guy.
Sure.
But it wasn't a funny show.
Right.
And all these guys were going in and making the room laugh. And I was, you know, just short of shitting my pants.
Sure.
So I didn't make anybody laugh. I walked right in, said, hi, let's do this, okay. And I did exactly what Aaron said. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And as I'm doing the last line, I had my sides on my lap like this. And I made a gesture like that. And my sides flew everywhere.
Oh, my God.
So I went, boom, and that's the end of the scene. And I looked up, and they're all just cascading all around. And like, one of the Pearsons kind of, like, smiled, but not laughing, but sort of kind of smirking. And I went, thank you. I scooped up all the papers, and I ran my car. As I'm going down the hallway, I'm, like, I'm briskly walking. I don't want to run, because...
Yeah.
But Susan, one of the casting directors, walks... Or Nancy comes out and goes, Charlie! And I'm like, what? I'm like, I just made an ass out of myself. I'm just going to go to my
car. Won't you let me go?
She's like, great job. And I didn't even really hear what she said.
Uh-huh.
I went, yeah. And I turned around and I just went to my car and I'm like, sort of hyperventilating, sort of like that cold sweat thing. I'm like,
sure.
Oh, shit. I think I just ruined my career. And so I got home that night and they're like, yeah, you're the guy. And I'm like, what do you mean I'm the guy? And they're like, you got it. Well, it's not final, but you got it.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. So I'm thinking, okay, this is like a recurring, but who knows how many. And then I did every episode.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, what? Why wasn't I saying it was regular?
Yeah.
You're like, but yeah, it was nuts.
That is nuts. That's like the opposite of what happened to me on a pilot that I thought I was going to get. Like, I went out and I've never killed in a network test like that.
They're hard.
They're super hard. And I've bombed lots of times. And I don't even think that it was necessarily my fault. I think the cards were... Like, I tested for Arrested Development. And it was me and French Stewart up for the role. Yeah. Neither of us got it, obviously, but that on that day, that didn't matter. But he went in, and, like, I hear him killing in the room before he's, you know, everybody's like, what? Applause and shit. And I'm out there going, that's a warm room.
That'll be super.
They sound like a nice bunch. So I walk through the door, like, nice bunch. And, like,
hi, fella.
Yeah, and as soon as I walk through the door, I knew I was fucked. Before I said a word, I could tell that just the room went fucking cold. And I don't know if it was because, hey, here's this kind of famous guy.
Yeah.
And then here's this, who's this guy? Who's this guy?
Not that exact thing, but that pretty much happened to me when I went in to test for this pilot. And Frank Whaley showed up at the same time as me.
Yeah.
And they have their tongue so far up this guy's ass. And I'm like, wow, Frank Whaley. He just, you know, swimming with sharks and other stuff and Hoffa. And so I'm like, wow, this guy's amazing.
And let's not forget career opportunities.
Well, I was going to just leave that as a cherry on the top. But so they're like, why don't you read with Charlie? And I went, and I'm like, oh, fuck. So I start, like, and everybody in the room is just in transfixed on him.
They're looking at the celebrity and not at you.
And it was almost like they wanted me to shut up and not say any of my lines so he could just talk the whole time. And like they laughed every time a syllable came out of his mouth. And he was trying some stuff.
Yeah.
That wasn't working for me at all. And I walked out of there like, I just got whaleyed.
Yeah. Like, you got whaleyed.
I got whaleyed.
He like, whaleyed you.
And that he didn't sucks. Even get it. That's a thing that pissed me off.
Well, yeah. But that was true about me. Then I did another one where I went in and I didn't have to talk at a certain point. And the laughter kept rolling through the room. It was hysterical. And then when I walked out, like, all the recognizable character actors who were outside looked at me like I was an asshole. And I was like, this is my fucking job, you know?
That's the greatest stuff, when you do that in a commercial, when you're in there for like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you walk out and you're like, what's up? Everybody's like,
God damn it. Yeah, and you're just trying to be cool, but you know you fucking killed. So I killed, and then my agent called me and said, you know, this is your thing. This is going to be a hit show. And then the next week, they were mixing and matching people because it was sort of an ensemble show. So they had their ensemble that day. We went through that whole rigmarole. So we're all finally there in the room together. And my agent calls and says, looks like, you know, you guys are going. They love what you did, blah, blah, blah. And then some asshole somewhere was like, we should hire people that people already know. So, and it's a comedy show. And they hired Dean Cain, and friggin' Dan Cortez is the guy who got my part. And I was like,
wow.
Really? I mean, really? Really?
Nothing says comedy like MTV and Dan Cortez. Shit.
Anyway, I suppose you kind of got to wrap up your show, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can get one of the other four guys to come. So
maybe do this again
with
a better guest.
But
I get it.
You know what? I would like to thank everybody for listening to the
Toncast.
Yeah. I'm happy you're here.
yeah, I remember stuff.
My name is Charlie Warrick. I am your host, and I fear that this may be short-lived. So thanks for joining me. We'll see.